Hello, friends. We are here, having completed Esoteric Astrology Adventure 104 A and B. We are into the Decanate section. Esoteric Astrology 105. We're in the Gemini chapter, page 369. And many things will come to our mind as we study Gemini, which has in it the sense of motion in two directions, reciprocal motion between the poles. And when we're talking about the wheel turning in two directions simultaneously and its often rending effect as that happens, we can attune with the sign Gemini, in which this is a prominent dynamic. So trying to decide which really are the rulers and which way the wheels are turning for those rulers is not easy, and DK says so here. He says, in connection with the Decanates and their rulers, it is interesting to find that Sephariel and Alleniel give entirely different ruling planets, and yet both are right. Uniquely for him, Sephariel gives the three planets of Jupiter, Mars, and Sun. We remember that this is a Chaldean system which uses the geocentric planetary periods, that is, how long it takes for a particular planet, including the Sun, envisioned as a planet, to revolve around the Earth. From the geocentric position, of course, it's really the Earth revolving around the Sun. We know that. But it's approximately 27 days for the Moon and 88-some days for Mercury and 260-something days for Venus and the Earth, of course. Well, the Earth is not there. It'll be the Sun. And then Mars, some 2 years, and Jupiter, some 12 years, and so on out to Saturn with its approximately 29-year geocentric period. And so the way we work with Sephariel is that we begin with a certain planet and move inward towards the Moon and then outward to Saturn and back inward again. So the order is Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Sun, Venus, Mercury, Moon. So Sephariel is not really choosing these. He's simply going with the system, just the way Alleniel went with the Hindu system, which looked at every sign as connected to the signs within the same triplicity. For instance, as we know, Aries sub Aries for the first 10 degrees, Aries sub Leo for the next 10, and Aries sub Sagittarius for the next 10, from 20 to 30. Now, none of these astrologers and theorists conceived of the reverse wheel, or if they did, they did not discuss it in their work. The Tibetan is the one who is bringing us the idea that the personal human being, who is not yet affected by soul influence, moves clockwise through the signs from 30 to 20, from 20 to 10, from 10 to 0. So when Alleniel and Sephariel assigned their planets as decanate rulers, they were moving in the counterclockwise direction. And so this assignment for Sephariel is pretty obviously Jupiter for the first decanate, Mars for the second, Sun for the third, and also for Alleniel. And we'll get into that. Alleniel is looking at Gemini and considers Mercury the ruler of 0 to 10. Venus, the sub-ruler of Libra, the ruler from 10 to 20, and Saturn, the sub-ruler of Aquarius, from 20 to 30, and not the reverse. So, uniquely for him, Sephariel gives the three planets of Jupiter, Mars, and the Sun, and thus indicates those which are the esoteric rulers of the sign upon the wheel of discipleship, which is the counterclockwise wheel. Usually, his choice is exoteric and not esoteric. Leo, in this case, gives, as I was saying, gives Mercury, Venus, and Saturn, and all three of these, these three govern the wheel of ordinary life. But we know that in Alan Leo's mind, he was assigning Mercury, Venus, and Saturn to the decanates progressively moving counterclockwise, not conceiving of the method which DK was using. Between them, they cover the wheel as it turns in both directions, or as the energy flows in the etheric body move in different ways, depending on whether one is oriented toward the soul or still simply dealing with the lower chakras and functioning as a personality. You will note how two out of the governing planets of the decanates, in the case of the ordinary wheel, serve to enhance the planetary rulers of this sign. The case of the ordinary, two of them, a Gemini with Saturn. Well, we've already discussed the way that Mercury and Gemini are mutually supportive and have strong parallels. But Mercury with Saturn, Gemini with Saturn, offering at a certain fairly advanced stage the opposition needed to bring about a basic revolution. This is a very occult phrase. Sometimes one can think of Saturn as opposing the Sun, and giving that basic sense of the extent of the solar system used in the these decanate rulerships. Now, what DK seems to be implying here is that before, when a person is quite mentally focused, but not yet really reorienting himself on the path, that Saturn would be the planet that promotes a kind of decision which allows for advancement to a reorientation in the clockwise direction. So in the later stages, DK seems to be saying, of the clockwise direction, and I'll show this in a minute, Saturn offers the opportunity to move in a counterclockwise direction. And this is called, well, you know what it's called. It's called the reversal of the wheel. And so some theorists have concluded that, in fact, DK is suggesting that the first decanate of Gemini reached last, because the ordinary man enters by the last decanate, that first decanate should be ruled by Saturn, and the first decanate by Mercury, and of course always Venus is the ruler of the second decanate, so we don't have a problem there. Two out of the governing planets of the decanates, in the case of the ordinary wheel, serve to enhance the planetary rulers of this sign. The planetary rulers of the sign are actually Mercury, Venus, and the Earth. So on the ordinary wheel, Mercury and Venus are the decanate rulers. So let's look at that. Mercury, whoop. Oh, that's not the right thing. That's another webinar. All right. All right. We'll look here. As soon as I can find my cursor, it's still early in the morning here. So we'll look here. Ordinary rulers of the sign. Now I got it. I was making it a little bit more complex than it needed to be. Mercury and Venus are rulers of Gemini and also decanate rulers. So the idea of enhancement is the same as the idea of reinforcement. with Saturn, which is the other decanate ruler, offering the chance to reverse the wheel and move in the direction of the soul. Note this phrasing. The entire question of the revolving wheel with its dual action, in this sense, so Geminian, and its dual effect upon consciousness, and therefore the whole problem of the three decans, notice he doesn't say decanates there, but this is another way to use the term, the whole problem of the three decans and the rulers in each sign of the zodiac must remain a difficult and abstruse problem until such time as astrologers have developed four-dimensional consciousness and know the true meaning of the biblical phrase, the wheel turning upon itself, because then it will be seen. Fourth-dimensional consciousness is coming at certain initiatory points. The different chakras turn fourth-dimensional or are seen as such at the at various initiations, the etheric chakras at the first, the astral chakras at the second, and certain of the mental chakras at the third initiation, the fourth dimensionality of these chakras occurring at those points. In reality, the wheel does not turn like a wheel in a car, either forward or the reverse. It turns in both ways, every way, and in every way. So it's a sphere, a rotating sphere, revolving upon itself, and in both ways, simultaneously. This fact is as yet impossible, an impossible one for the human consciousness to grasp, because there must be, you know, fourth. Okay, let's see how we do this. Fourth dimensional vision. The complexity involved, and this is Gemini, a sign in which much Mercurian complexity is encountered, the complexity involved in the progress through the decans, conditioning also the rulers, is to be found based upon the multiple action of the wheel. So, you know, when we say that we have understood why certain rulers should be assigned to certain decans, we have certain systems, the Hindu and the Chaldean system, but in terms of the actual derivation of the assignment of the rulerships, unless we have this kind of vision, we will not know the ultimate source of the assignment. Now, DK does have this kind of vision, and he's giving this to us, but often in oblique ways, so that it's difficult to understand. And here in Gemini, a certain obliqueness is found, and I'll try to demonstrate why this is so. The wheel, therefore, moves not only clockwise, but in both ways at once, and at right angles to itself. And this is very much like the rotation of the planes and the rays. With rays, the planes moving from east to west. I don't need to capitalize, east to west, and the rays from north to south. In fact, the planes really are chakras in a certain sense. And the motion that he assigned to them when he tried to explain this dynamic interaction of the third and the second aspect, with the planes representing the third aspect and the rays the second, he gave us something that could be applied also to the rotation of the chakras. Now, what I'm going to do here, I'm going to go into the usual kinds of papers before we get into the discussion of the words that are connected with Gemini. We're going to look at these decanates in the landscape view. And here we, Gemini is in yellow, a little difficult to see. But we have the Gemini sub-Gemini decanate, the Gemini sub-Libran decanate, and the Gemini sub-Aquarius decanate. These things do work out, and the rulers that Alan Leo chose do seem to show up in the appearance and behavior of people born in these particular decanates in Gemini. It is a subtle matter to a degree. I noticed, for instance, and this is a very mundane example, but Angela Jolie, who is quite a famous actress at this time, is a Gemini, but she has a very strong sub-Libra quality because she's born in that part of Gemini, as I recall. And when you trace out the physiognomy, the jawline, and other factors of her appearance, and even how she has engaged in issues of fairness regarding certain groups in the world, you do see the Libra sub-influence, and you certainly see the Venus sub-influence. This is there. It may not be esoterical. I guess it may not be esoteric in the Tibetans' understanding of that term, but it is definitely present and therefore effective as determining orientation and character to a degree. Now, we want to also know what are the dynamics between soul and personality, and for that we may have to consult the Sephirial decanates. Here are the Sephirial decanates. You see how they move from Jupiter, Mars, to the Sun. And then, if we were to go on to the sign Cancer, they would be Venus, Mercury, and the Moon. Interestingly enough, for these two signs, Gemini and Cancer, Master DK pretty well chooses the Sephirial decanates, which is unusual. I don't know if there are any others where he does that. Sometimes he says a mixture of Leo's approach, Alan Leo's approach, and of Sephirial's approach is really the correct one. But in these two instances, Jupiter, Mars, and Sun, and then if we continue inward towards the Earth, we would have Venus, Mercury, and the Moon, and only Saturn, is out of the picture here. And Saturn has been the decanate ruler of the last decanate of Taurus, according to Sephirial. So we see how they go in order. The extra zodiacal constellations here, now this is a theory, of course, there are Alice Bailey gave in The Labors of Hercules three extra zodiacal constellations. And it has been intuited originally by Nicholas Nilan that these constellations should be correlated each with a particular decanate. Sometimes Alice Bailey gives the order, a kind of order, of these extra zodiacal constellations. She discusses them in a certain order. And I believe that in the Gemini case, I'm not going to reference it right now, that she discusses them in this order. And so Lepus the hare is assigned from 0 to 10. Canis Minor, that is the lesser dog with the star Procyon, important for our solar system, is assigned to the middle decanate and the Libran decanate. And Canis Major, which contains many powerful stars, but for us, the most influential being Sirius, the major conditioning star for our solar system. And so, when you look at these extra zodiacal constellations, they have other names in other systems. The unclean bird standing on a serpent is another name for Lepus, and sometimes, as Alice Bailey described it, Lepus represents the aspirant, always running away from the hound of heaven, running away from the living the life of the soul, wanting to escape. So hence we can understand the uncleanliness of the bird because it has not yet been purified. The lesser dog is eager and represents the disciple, one-pointedly moving towards his objective, the higher aspirant or disciple. And the greater dog represents the initiate. Well, it fits quite well here that Mars should be the decanate ruler for the lesser dog with all its eagerness. As a matter of fact, when observers and theorists have commented on the effect of Procyon, it gives rapidly achieved effects which fade. So the aspirant is unstable, unsteady, and achieves rapidly but may not be able to hold the gains the true initiate under Sirius can hold the gains. I mean, what we call an aspirant, you know, varies. Anyone applying to any initiation up to the third degree is called an aspirant. And I suppose you can even think of aspirants to any initiation, those who aspire to reach a certain initiation. As for Jupiter, it's more difficult to correlate it with Lepus, the cowardly hare, quite yellow in the sense of cowardice, running away from responsibility, duty, fate. It's not very Jupiterian, but it is Mercurian. And in that sense, it looks to me like the Mercury assignment by Alan Leo fits well with the idea of the hare. So what we're going to do is look at these sets of decanate rulers. He says both of them, let's see, I just have to find it here, that both are correct. You know, both are right. So we're going to look at them, and we're going to see how they might apply to people moving through different stages of evolution. Now I will pull in another chart that I made for some of the classes that I was teaching. You've seen these before, and of course they really, you know, they have to be in a sense upgraded. They have to be made more consistent with each other because they were done over a period of time. But let's just say that I have enough here to make suggestions. So here we have the 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. Now the theory is, of course, the Tibetan has given us this theory for our experimentation, that the average man who is turning on the clockwise wheel actually enters the sign from a clockwise direction and moves from 30 to 20, 20 to 10, and 10 to 0. So what's important here is that the first decanate encountered by the average man is really the third for the more advanced man. The second decanate will be the same. It's the second decanate for the average man or for the more soul-oriented man. And the third decanate encountered in entry into the wheel is really the 10 to 0 decanate, which is the first decanate for the more advanced individual. Now the question is, you know, how to assign, how to assign the planets, what direction to put them in. I think if we look here, we're going to see, this is a graphic from Stephen Pugh, and he has actually assigned on the outer wheel, moving clockwise, Mercury, Venus, and Saturn. It's kind of a reverse order. He's reversed the wheel and or put the Alan Leo decanates in an order reversed from the manner that Alan Leo himself put them. We also have Nicholas Nilan doing the same. For him, the outer wheel is the wheel of consciousness, and the inner wheel is moving in the reverse direction. And he also, as Stephen Pugh does, uses Mercury to rule the 30 to 20 decanate, Venus the 20 to 10, and Saturn the 0, the 10 to 0. Now, as I've thought about this, I am convinced that neither Alan Leo nor Safariel meant to put those rulers in that particular order. Yet, because of what the Tibetan says about a later stage of evolution, a fairly advanced stage where Saturn causes an opposition which leads to a basic reversal, we have to think that perhaps that the third decanate encountered by the average person may have a Saturnian effect, that Gemini with Saturn offering at a fairly advanced stage the opposition needed. The opposition to Saturn is the disciplining planet, and it offers the opposition to the normal instinctual way of movement. Saturn causes you to pause and reflect. So at least psychologically, there is a moment of evaluation and decision. which can bring about that basic revolution, which is the reversal of the wheel. So, how to assign these things? Well, we'll get to that in just a minute. As you see, what I've tried to do here is put arrows leading towards a green fulfillment. It's kind of a little star there that represents the mental personal phase before the reorientation. I have left the decanates here in the order that Alan Leo put them. Mercury to the first, Venus to the second, Saturn. The generic meaning is slow and labored formation of relationships within the environment, based upon instinctual satisfaction and survival, a slow growth of the mind in the understanding of relationships. Saturn slows everything down and steadies them and gives us our first realistic encounter with the not-self and all of those many forces which seem to oppose us, and we have to learn the ways of the environment because the man is entirely outward turned. I call this first decanate the decanate of inception. It is it has a kind of a Lemurian correlation. Now, as I've often said, it doesn't mean that if you're born in this decanate, even as an average man, that you're Lemurian. It doesn't mean that at all. But in terms of the structure, we can think of it as the most physical decanate for the man entering from the 30 to 20, the 30 to 20 mode. Venus is the second decanate. I call it the decanate of development. It has, I should even call it the decanate of emotional development. Then it goes from 20 to 10. And I've given kind of a generic meaning, attraction between the pairs of opposites, but they are physical, of course, between the one who desires and that which is desired. There, Gemini always represents a duality or a polarity. It can be between people, it can be between objects, things, circumstances, and there's an attraction between that other. Attraction between the pairs of opposites, between the one who desires and that which is desires, between the self and the other. I'm not even talking about the higher pairs of opposites here, the soul, not yet, no. And then we get into the third decanate, which, in my view, would be ruled by Mercury. At least when we look at people who are born in this decanate, they carry a very Mercurian kind of quality. I call this preparing for reversal. Now, in the event, because it is preparing for reversal, it carries that Saturnian note about which DK discussed. Mental preparation for reversal. The person is at least cultivating the mind. So generic meaning would be fluid growth of the mind, mental versatility and stability, learning through multiple exposures and experiences, realization of the higher pairs of opposites with which one must connect. But it's, and I want to call it realization or theorization. Maybe theorization would be more accurate because we don't really have a connection here with the higher self. We're in the hall of ignorance. So at least it becomes a possibility. Perhaps dim realization of the higher of the pairs of opposites. In other words, there's a reason. Something else is calling to us, and we begin to realize there's something more than what we usually think of as our life. We're beginning to step into the hall of learning, the second tier of petals, where the higher of the pairs of opposites begins to come into focus. We're preparing for that. Now, so the way to do this is the movement from Saturn, Venus, to Mercury, but I'm not excluding the possibility, as Stephen and Nicholas affirm or assert, that we can move from Mercury, Venus, to Saturn. I also give that possibility below, and research will tell us which way to arrange the Alan Leo decanates, to arrange them as he himself arranged them, and then move in a clockwise manner. Now, of course, I realize that, I guess I'm looking at the screen here, and you know, everything is, in a sense, counterclockwise. But you have to, you know, understand what is meant here. that this is meant to represent a movement backwards against the normal mode of the zodiac. This first part of the tabulation is meant to indicate a clockwise movement toward the color green. The color green, of course, is mental. It involves the third ray, the third aspect. And as the personality is perfected, it is the green that is perfected. When the soul enters, it's the generic blue, which is under development. Now we're going to use Sepharial's decanates, and we're moving from 0 to 10, from 10 to 20, and from 20 to 30. And this is our normal mode of progression. It's called the reversal of the wheel, and we are moving in a counterclockwise direction. So then the decanates will be assigned Jupiter, Mars, and Sun, just as the Tibetan has suggested. This is easier to deal with, I think, because it is so clear, even though you kind of wonder why does he choose the Sepharial decanates for both Gemini and Cancer. Why is this? I call this the decanate of personal summation, reversal, reorientation. There are phases in it, and I look at these phases as the integrating personality, the integrated personality, and the aspiring integrated personality, namely, if I can call it this, the aspirant. Now again, this is generic. It doesn't mean that if you are born in this decanate, you might not be an initiate or you might not be a disciple. I think research will demonstrate that there are disciples and initiates born in all the decanates. Just think, you know, there's only three decanates and there's millions and millions of people. So, you know, regardless of what the theory seems to indicate, I think we will see the great human beings who are certainly disciples beyond are born in all the decanates. This is my theory, and I think I can substantiate this simply by looking at a number of famous people born in Gemini. It makes me kind of wonder whether I shouldn't see if I can go to this, reports, interpretations, charts. Okay. Now, here to give you just an idea of what I mean, I've set up a little chart search just for certain famous individuals. I hope you can see that in the center and notice that the great poet Dante Alighieri is born in the second decanate. Obviously, he is an initiate. If I make this, let's see if I can, Dante Alighieri, and this is the chart usually given for him. His ascendant is in the first decanate. His sun is in the second decanate. I suppose it's the old style. But he is an initiate, clearly, with his Divine Comedy being so influential, a summation of the medieval view of the world. A great individual. And not born in the third decanate at all, but having indications in the first decanate and the second. Now, let's see. We can look at some of the other people here. Of course, Alice Bailey is born in the third decanate. We know her to be an initiate. Isadora Duncan, an initiate of her own type on the fourth ray, I think. Certainly an advanced individual born in the first decanate. Let's look further. John Fitzgerald Kennedy, a strong disciple, born in the first decanate. In other words, these people are not simply aspiring personalities. They are already disciples of some kind. Anton Mesmer, born in the first decanate. Probably a seventh-ray disciple or initiate, introducing the idea of subtle energies. well, all different kinds of rays are here found. Robert Schumann's second decanate, Richard Wagner, okay. This is important. Richard Wagner, an initiate of some kind, surely, along the fourth ray line with incredible music that it is said even the masters wondered at the beauty of his music. He had many personal factors which maybe needed some correction. But as a high consciousness born in the first decanate, not simply a reorienting personality, but someone who was connected with divine streams. Now, when it comes to Walt Whitman, there is an initiate, and he's born either here in the first or second decanate. I will, and of course, I could deal with the ascendant in Gemini as well, and I think it would prove the case. Walt Whitman's horoscope, it's one in which Taurus is rising. He had that wonderful earthy quality, so all things that were embodied in form were seen to him as being, as existing within the divine. But it's the first decanate, and this is a man whose so-called cosmic consciousness was celebrated by a number of his devotees. He sang what's called the Song of Myself, in which he really understood the second ray mantra, naught is but me. That's the first decanate. He's an initiate here. I believe an initiate of the third degree in terms of his perception. He's not born in the last decanate of Gemini, but in the first, not even in the second, which would make him a disciple. So I think you see my point. I could go on, you know, proving this with people of high caliber, obviously either high disciples or initiates born in decanates that are not assigned to their particular status. So I think we have to disabuse ourselves of the idea that the first decanate will only contain the integrating personality, the aspiring integrating personality, and the second decanate will contain the disciple or probationary initiate, and the third decanate, only there will one who is dealing with the monad emerge. Walt Whitman was definitely dealing with the monad. He did perceive the oneness, and that is what the monad reveals. So people at the soul stage are found in all decanates, not just the second. People at the personal stage or the integrated, selfish integrated personality stage or aspirant stage are found in all decanates, not just the first, and initiates in all decanates. And, of course, I could laboriously go through more examples, but probably that gives you the idea you need. So the generic meaning of the first decanate under Jupiter is the life of rapidly expanding consciousness as soul potentials are envisioned and embraced. Fecundity of thought, fecundity and fullness of thought. The mind is really growing, and all the different parts of the personality are becoming integrated under Jupiter, integration under Jupiter. The generic meaning of the Mars decanate, I already talked about the eagerness associated with Procyon, the lesser dog, intense conflict between the pairs of opposites, that is soul and personality, with both the soul and personality asserting themselves, and the soul is becoming victorious. So it really emphasizes the conflict side of Gemini, and Mercury also is involved in that conflict, being a ray four, a planet from one perspective. And when we get to the third decanate, which is the decanate of spiritual consummation, the generic meaning, it's ruled by the sun, reconciliation of the pairs of opposites achieved, duality overcome, the Antikarana ends in the, well, let's say, perception of unity, complete unity, or the consciousness of unity, identification as the one self, certainly identification as the higher self, which absorbs the lesser self into itself. So those are the kind of the generic ideas here. Now, you know, in, as my usual method, I look at the Lemurian stage of development, the Atlantean stage, the early Aryan stage, and so forth. And as you see what I've done here, these early stages of human development will be under what D.K. calls the ordinary wheel. And that ordinary wheel is said to be, by him, related to Mercury, Venus, and Saturn. So I've put Mercury, Venus, and Saturn here and move in both directions. Mercury, Venus, Saturn, or should we say maybe Saturn, Venus, Mercury, and Mercury, Venus, Saturn. So this is the way I prefer, which is Saturn, Venus, Mercury, as I think it is the way that these astrologers intended, but granting the other possibility, Mercury, Venus, and Saturn actually in the first decanate. So in this Lemurian phase, we're under the orthodox ruler primarily. The mobile, adaptive, intelligent, or at least a sense of growing intelligence will be found. So Mercury is the orthodox ruler. And what we have from page 332, where Gemini is discussed, along with all the other signs, 332, 333, mutation of relation, I serve myself. So there's constant exposure to differing circumstances, differing people, and the relationships are always changing, changeable relationships, and I call this, in general, the gradual increase of mobility, of contact and intelligence, of interactivity, contact, I want to put that there, interactivity upon the physical plane while living the instinctual life, because in the strictly physical phase, which is not very much found in human beings anymore, there is the living of the instinctual life. If we start from 30 to 20 with Saturn, we would say learning more about the physical environment through difficulty. But if we start with Mercury, we'd say expanding the range of physical contacts. So simply being mobile enough to learn what is in the physical environment. We come to Venus next in this very physical phase, and there would be attraction to multiple objects of desire coming into relationship with them. And especially the sacral center would be involved here because it is a physical stage, but also perhaps objects of beauty, even in some aspect of the later Lemurian stage. Venus is the planet of beauty, and its effect in form is to make certain forms look desirable. We come then to Mercury in the third decanate moving clockwise, but really the first decanate counterclockwise, and we say stimulation of the sense-based mind. So there is some element of mind in the Lemurian stage, but it's used mostly to negotiate the outer environment, and it's based entirely on the senses. There's not much emotional or sentient input, and there's not much thought on the plane of mind per se, but the thought is related to how to respond to and deal with the physical environment, which is pretty much the limiting perception. But if that were to be Saturn, we would say improvement and stabilization of the sense-based intelligence. So a person would have a more realistic understanding. Certain relationships would be seen as repetitive and fundamental in the environment. These would be noticed, and one could live a more realistic life. That instinctual life goes on for a long time. That first petal takes millions of years to open. It's a long time before the Lemurian stage enters the Atlantean stage, some millions of years. So the intelligence of man is very dim indeed at first. When we, we're talking about human beings of whom there are not many on our planet at this time. It's sort of a historical perspective. Maybe if we go into some of the Aboriginal areas, we will find people more closely approximating the Lemurian stage, but as DK says, everybody has one petal open of the egoic lotus. So everyone, you know, has moved sort of into the next stage, which involves the cultivation of the emotional life, or at least the experience of the emotional life. So we're still, now let's see what is said here larger sense. We're in the emotional phase of development. It lasts for, again, many millions of years. It's still under Mercury because nobody will respond to the esoteric ruler in an esoteric way, or to the hierarchical ruler. You know, we have Mercury, Venus, and the Earth. No one will respond to Venus and the Earth if they're still in this densely personal stage. A great many human beings are in the emotional stage today, or in the chamomanastic stage, which includes some degree of mind. If under Mercury, then Mercury is still the orthodox ruler, and mutation of relation is still prevailing. I serve myself. But I've said here the appearance of more intelligent desires and the increasing use of intelligence in achieving them. So maybe, let's just say, the number of desires increase. The number of desires increase, and there is a growing mind to assist with the fulfilling of these noticed desires. But now looking at the decanates, we're going to enter either via Saturn or Mercury, and I think, you know, this still has to be proved. There's much to say that, as I said, that everyone born from 0 to 10 in Gemini, in the conventional 0 to 10, shows those Mercurian characteristics. Rather, perhaps, than the Saturnian characteristics. But anyway, we're entering under Saturn, and it's the world of desire and the world of feeling, and of sensitive response, and of the plus-minus, the attraction-repulsion of the astral body. So the desire nature will be checked by physical plane realities. We can say even there will be a kind of inhibition of desire based upon what realities will allow. But if we enter via Mercury, as some suggest we should, there will be the development of more intelligent, or at least cunning, ways of fulfilling a variety of desire, because Mercury has a lot of the third ray. And it can be connected with the animal cunning. This is a human being who's still in the very chamic phase, and knowing only that he desires what he desires, but perhaps not knowing really why or what good it will do him. With Venus, in the emotional stage, there's an increasing attraction to others, and the development of emotional rapport with others, more sensitive rapport, and with the environment in general, because Venus is a planet of sensitization, a planet of refinement. So let's just say the noticing attractive objects of beauty, and magnetically moving towards them. And so that's the same. We're moving in the clockwise direction. And then either Mercury or Saturn. If Mercury, then the fluid, versatile mind increases in its understanding of feeling and of the emotional states. So we're getting to the phase where it's not just what we desire, but what we think about what we desire. It's still fairly primitive, but at least we can use the mind to engage with our desire nature. And if Saturn, there will be a greater mental regulation of emotional response. Saturn always slows things down. It stabilizes, it freezes things in relation to each other. It cuts down on the purposeless mobility, the maya of things, and allows one to stabilize the perception and thereby control, regulate, and make a choice. Well, you know, these are, we're talking about people now who are very much on the personal wheel, on the clockwise wheel, and a great many people, I suppose, are involved here, but even more are involved in the Kemba monastic stage. So whatever we say of the monastic stage, the mental lower personal stage, and whatever we said of the emotional stage, we can blend them for the Kemba monastic stage, and there the majority of human beings will be found. So in a generic sense, we're entering now the mental or lower personal stage. The personality will be integrated around the mind, but first the mind has to be somewhat developed before there can be a personality. So we're still under Mercury because we're still a personality, or even working on elements of the personality. We're under Mercury as the Orthodox ruler, and we still have mutation of relation. I serve myself. The illusory sense of the self at the center is still very strong, and there is not a sense of a higher of the pairs of opposites, not really. Although even, you know, even in the emotional stage, there can be kind of a dim reverence or a dim sense of a higher power, but one doesn't identify it as one's own higher self. That's the thing. It's God. It's some greater power before which one stands in awe, sentient awe, because one feels overwhelmed by this amazing greater power. So in the emotional stage, there will be the religious impulse of some kind, though primitive. But here we are in the cultivation of the mind. We're pretty much dealing with the third petal of the egoic lotus, still in the knowledge tier. Movement towards, there will be a general movement towards the Venus phase, but that will come later. Venus will begin to have some effect in the aspirational phase, but we're not there yet. The concrete mind becomes highly developed in this phase. The man is intelligent with respect to his environment, though still working in the hall of ignorance, and experientially unaware of the higher of the pairs of opposites, of the fact that whatever is conceived of as the great power or deity or that which is hidden and to be worshipped is not understood as one's own higher self or an expansion of one's own higher self. The higher self, the soul, and the higher power, however great it is, are really one and the same. Eventually this will be proven when unity consciousness supervenes. Now, so we're still moving from Saturn to Venus to Mercury, or from Mercury to Venus to Saturn. But we're in the mental phase now. And this is coming much, much later, after millions of years. It's only recently, as man has entered the Aryan, the fifth root race, that large number of people are cultivating the mind. Some in Atlantis did, but not by and large. Atlanteans were relatively Kamic or Kama monastic at best. And as DK said, the great leaders, they thought, planned, designed, and the others carried out their thoughts. So when we deal with entry via Saturn, we have the lower mind coming under the rules. There's more logical thinking. The mind is better controlled. Let's just say that. Mind is better controlled, and relationship with the environment more regulated by mind. So a person is becoming more successful in his dealings with his circumstances. If it would be Mercury, there would be generally the stimulation of the intelligence of the lower mind. So Mercury is one of the rulers of Gemini, and here it's a decanate ruler as well, if we go against the direction that Helen Leo suggested. And I'm not saying that we cannot. This does remain to be proven by dealing with a an accurate and sufficiently large sample of people who are in this stage. I mean, accurately, we must know them to be in this stage. We must understand with accuracy that they are in this stage. With regard to Venus, refinement of the mind and its response to the realization of more desirable objectives. So there is the not just the refinement of the astral nature and the desire nature, but more light is coming into the mind, and let's just say a higher sense of values is at work. A higher sense of values. The objectives that one seeks are not so crude. They are analyzed more in the light. So this is some aesthetics are coming in. If we reach the third decanate, which going on the reverse wheel would be considered more mental, so concrete intelligence would be developing rapidly under Mercury. This is really the stimulation of the mind, strong stimulation of the mind, lower mind, stim. If Saturn is the ruler, there would be the growth of mental realism and rational thinking, and this is what DK means by the basic reversal. There would be a decision to move towards the now dimly sensed higher of the pairs of opposites, towards the now dimly sensed higher of the pairs of opposites. That's what would happen there. So this mental personal phase under Mercury in general must lead to what we call the reversal of the wheel, and things turn around in the other direction, as I tried to show by the arrows above, which led to the fulfillment of the blue star. This is my way of symbolizing it. The clockwise direction leads to a kind of fulfillment in green, and the counterclockwise to a fulfillment in blue. One is a personal fulfillment, one is the fulfillment of the soul within the personality, and eventually soul fulfillment. So now we are at the point where we're no longer dealing with Alan Leo's decanate rulers, though it is my impression that when one looks at life within these decanates, that the rulers given by Alan Leo could be viewed on a higher turn of the spiral, and that they would be also significant in describing the psycho-spiritual life of the individual. As I say, this has yet to be established. It requires a very refined analysis here, accompanied with investigation, careful observation of the individuals involved, and much knowledge of their psyche and the blending of that psyche with spiritual potentials. Then we could tell whether the Alan Leo Mercury Venus Saturn assignment could be used to indicate spiritual potentials. But of course, Master DK has his own good reasons for indicating here that the Jupiter-Mars-Sun combination of Sepharial and the Chaldean system is the one to use on the reversing wheel. So that's where we are at this point. And we are ready now to, I think, let us move into the next phase, which is that of the reversing wheel. And I think what I will do is bring this particular section of our work to an end. It's 105A, and we'll call it Esoteric Astrology Adventure 105A. And it is the end of that. And we are in the sixfold chart. We're not really on any particular page, although we did conclude here, in a sense, with this particular paragraph, which is in page 3, on page 369. So I'll also put it here, that we have the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 105, and 105A. Also, this is page 369, but also within the six-fold chart. Okay. Now, moving on.